Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Jeffrey Bryant Jr., 17 years of combination experience, third generation firefighter, backstep firefighter with Aurora Fire Department in Illinois on Truck 2, Brothers in Battle cadre member, firefighter rescue survey member, president with Fire Nuggets, and one of the main support members with Firemanship. Jeffrey is a part of a ton of great things going on within the fire service, but his main focus is service, making sure that those who are counting on us are having their needs met when needed. After all, that's why fire departments across the country exist. The way Jeffrey discusses and talks about the fire service suggests irrefutably how much passion and love he truly has for it. With that, I present Jeffrey Bryant Jr.
My name's Jeffrey Bryant Jr. I got started in the fire service in 2007, small paid on call department where I live. Firehouse is literally 4 to 6 blocks from me right now, where my house is. They didn't have a cadet program, so wrote a letter to the current chief at that time to see if there was any interest, as a lot of the firefighters on that department had children that were on the department there. It took them like 9 months to a year, but then they brought us on in August of 07 as cadets, which cadets were 16 to 18 years old. And so 7 of us got started. And out of those 7, I think like 5 or 6 of us went on to be a career somewhere. So or their career involves the fire service. And that's kind of where I got my start as a kid. And then just kind of worked my way up, became a probationary fireman there, and then became a firefighter there, and then did some stuff with training there as well. I was their training coordinator is what they called it, because I wasn't an officer technically. And then started at a part-time department locally here, did that for about 2 years. And while I did that, I got hired as a contract, is what they called it, firefighter for a industrial facility named Citgo. You might have heard of it.
Yeah.
So worked for Citgo refinery for a year as an industrial firefighter, and then went to a small suburban department for 1 year, and then I've been with Aurora ever since. So loving it.
Okay. And first generation firefighter, do you have anybody in your family that's on the fire service or no?
Actually third generation.
Third generation. Okay. So it's in you.
Yeah. My grandfather started, I think in 1962, and, he retired as the chief of the department in, 1998. And then, both my mother and my father, were on the department as well. And then my sister's on there now. And my sister's a dispatcher also, so kind of in our blood, I guess.
Right. And is this all with Aurora?
With Amboy. It was a small paid-on-call department I got my start at in 2007.
Okay. And I'm assuming, is that in the Illinois area?
Yeah, it's about an hour west of where I work now.
Okay. All right. So with it, obviously, definitely with it in your family tree. So was it always something you wanted to do growing up?
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely tell you, I mean, I was a dumb kid, you know, dumb kid, dumb teenager, you know, whatever you call it. I thought I was going to be a fucking professional skateboarder. but that didn't go anywhere. And then, you know, I thought I wanted to do computer or video game design or something like that for a short little stint too. And then pretty much from 16 years old, when I got on that cadet program, that was when I knew that's what I wanted to do.
Okay. All right. And for those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us about Aurora, the size, amount of personnel, close to call volume, things of that nature?
Yeah. So it's the second largest city in Illinois. Obviously, Chicago is number one. And it's a huge difference, by the way. Chicago is millions of people. were somewhere between 200 to 300,000 people. 42 square miles, I believe. We have 9 firehouses currently. Number 10 is being built. We have 9 engine companies, 4 truck companies, 9 medic units, and then 3 battalion chiefs operate daily in the city. Sometimes we can cut that down to 2. Last year's call volume was probably right around 24,000. Now, that is like most other agencies. Out of 24,000, probably 21, 22,000 is probably EMS. I think that's standard. So about 80, 90% is EMS.
All right. And what's your minimum staffing across across the board?
I think now we're sitting pretty close to 60, 60, 62 per day. That'll cover we do three-man minimum. I mean, we in the winter months like now, it's nothing crazy to have a four-man truck company, which we have had most of the year already. So three-man except for the ambulances. The ambulances have two.
Two. Okay, so three men on the engine, three men on the truck, sometimes four on the truck.
Yep, and then even sometimes if we're heavy staffed, you can get a fourth on like one or two engine companies too.
Okay. And EMT basics, advanced, intermediate, paramedic.
Both EMT basic and paramedic. So if you're assigned to an ambulance or an engine in an ambulance together, because our guys do rotate, then you have to be a paramedic to be on the ambulance. But if you're on the truck company or if you're the firefighter, quote unquote, on the engine, you are not required to be a paramedic.
Okay. All right. And is it required for promotion?
To be a paramedic?
No, for like if you want to climb up through the ranks of the fires, like lieutenant, captain, is that just is paramedic required to do that?
No, sir.
No. Okay.
Nope.
Okay.
So I actually was I was a paramedic for 9, 10-ish years, and then we call it dropping your card. So you're no longer a paramedic for the department, but you still have to hold your EMS license and operate as a EMT basic. And then so I'm just on the truck company now and only go to fire calls, I guess, if you will.
Okay, so I'm assuming your trucks, do they run medicals or only at depending on how it goes?
Our trucks run about zero medicals.
Okay.
True trucks also, no confused engine truck companies here. The only water we have in my truck company is 5 gallons, a 2.5 gallon APW and a 2.5 gallon pump can. That's
Right.
it.
And as far as if a first due box comes in within the city limits of Aurora, what's your first alarm assignment?
Two engine companies, one truck company, one medic unit, and one battalion chief.
Okay. All right. And then I'm assuming if you need more, then you request more, but that's what you get on the structural box. Okay.
Yep, that's the same box every time you upgrade. So if you upgrade to a second alarm, two more engines, another truck, another medic, another BC.
Okay. All right. Let's see here. So, upon walking through the doors of Aurora, did you try to find or seek out those firefighters you wanted to be like?
Yeah, I'd say so, and I'd say they're my friends or mentors currently. It was a
Okay.
easy. It was an easy find, in my
Okay.
opinion. So,
And so, in your opinion, how important is that for anyone listening that's coming into the service to try to find those? Those A-team guys, those dogs, if you want to say.
it's everything. I think the people you are around will either set you on the right path or the wrong path, because you're going to follow that mentorship, and if they're a lazy piece of shit, just hanging out, just collecting air, then that's probably where you're going to find yourself in a couple short years as well. Once you can quote unquote hide well enough, versus if you got the guys that want to go out and do some training, go to fires, I'd rather be one of those guys that wants to go to to the calls, you know, like the good fires, the good wrecks, than be the one hoping that I'm not the guy first due at it.
Right.
So
Okay. And this is not a shot at your department, but do you think with a department your size, do you guys maybe have those individuals that are kind of hiding in the shadows?
there's definitely the opportunity to do it. I think it's very much company to company, you know, and it also on top of that, everyone, you make your own choice as to who you are as a human being and, you know, as a man and as a leader. So that's ultimately their choice. You know, you could be on a good crew and you could be a shitty person. And vice versa. You could be a good person and be on a shitty crew, you know. Unfortunately, timing and the people around you really affect everything.
Okay. And so were you always assigned on a truck, or is that something after a while of like doing engine company work, seeing the truck, was that something you were like, hey, I kind of want to deep dive into that?
No, I haven't always been on a truck. I've only been on a truck for like 2 years now. But I was a quote unquote medic assigned to the truck. So even about a year of that, I wasn't solely on it every day. I would jump over to the medic unit or the engine company when there was spots that needed to be filled in and stuff. So really, I've only been on it for probably about maybe a little shy of a year even.
Okay.
But before that, I was on two different engine companies, one on the Near East side, Engine 4, and then Engine 1, which is in the same house as Truck 2, which I loved engine work. But a good friend and mentor of mine also said, you know, hey, if you want to be a good leader, you should probably be effective at most things that you're going to have to do. So getting some truck company experience was something I kind of put on my list that I wanted to get done because it is a completely different mindset. It's a different ideology. It's different tasks.
Yes. Okay. One question that popped in my brain, and I definitely want to ask you. So, with your department, you know, you have individuals that rotate between the ambulance and either the truck or the engine. How difficult is it to keep those skills? Because you know, like when you ride the box, you know you're gonna run, you know, medical type calls, and so like when you do something more than the other, the skills tend to lack. So did you find it difficult to try to find that balance? Like, hey, if I'm going to be on this truck, I want to be able to do things like I'm supposed to.
I think when it was just two vehicles, so like when it was just the engine or the ambulance, I thought you know, you could kind of go back and forth, especially because the engines are ALS, so you have, you know, drugs and things like that on the engine. So if you're there first, you know, you're helping out the patient or whatever by yourself, quote unquote. It's just your company. There's no ambulance yet. So those skills, medically wise, are, you know, I think easy to keep up on. And then, you know, there's when you're only on two vehicles, right? There's only one vehicle you're going to go out and do a drill on because, you know, the ambulances are running, you know, 10 to 15 calls a day. So staying up on your skills is not really that hard as long as you actually get some advanced life support calls.
Right.
So we would go out and do drills, you know, on the engine. So I thought, you know, staying in tune with just the two vehicles was fine. But whenever a third vehicle was added to it, especially when that third vehicle, you know, is very large and has, it's literally nothing but a toolbox. It adds definitely, a little bit different problems and a little bit different techniques and skill sets to the mix, that was kind of a little bit difficult to adapt to. So, I it is nice now only having one vehicle. Let me put it that way. If you have the option to, I think being solely on one rig rather than flip-flopping is way easier.
Okay. And I did forget to ask this. So, you know, you mentioned that you guys have medic units. Do they operate in the capacity of medics only, or can they do structural firefighting as well?
Oh, they fight fires with us.
Okay. So,
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
okay.
Yep. So the same guys that ride the engine on, say, the third of the month, might be your guys in the medic unit on the 6th and the 9th, and then you'll get your guy back that was just on the engine again on the 12th, or however they decide to rotate and things like that. So everybody on the department is a firefighter, and that that's the part of the job that I think most love. I'm not gonna say everybody, but I think that most love that part of the job. So yeah, that's what they love to do.
Okay. All right. So in your opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
Oh, that you're willing to do whatever it takes to get the job done when it matters most.
All right. I can't really can't dispute that. I can't repeat that. All right. Okay. So with that being said, you're still a firefighter. And you went from the engine to the truck. And now that you're on the truck, what kind of skills did you realize, like, hey, like engine works, pulling hose, you're running medical calls, fire alarms, things like that. But when it comes to the truck side, like for me, I found that you start using different parts of your body, that you're not used to when you're on the truck. Like for me, throwing ladders was one of those things I was like, wow, like you really need to get good at that if you want to be proficient at it and not always require the help that's needed.
Are you saying like body type function, or are you saying like skill set
Skill
on the
set.
fire?
Skill set, yeah.
It's no shocker. Probably the only like probably the thing I suck the most at as being a guy on the truck is probably vertical ventilation, and that's just because of the amount of experiences that I have with it. And I think that's most true for most of the department and probably most of the American Fire Service, to be quite frank. Like when I was on the engine company, right? Like once we put a knock on the fire, we're searching back from the line, right? So I can still knock out search. If the truck company's going in a different door, we could still do force entry, right? We had a 24 and a 14 on the engine. I'm still throwing those. So like those three disciplines, as far as like the truck skills go, I felt decent with, or even confident with, if you'll say that. But as far as getting on the roof and cutting roofs, and I think most people, unfortunately, are not humble enough to say that they suck at something. And that's a huge problem that we have, is people are like, oh yeah, go on the roof, I'm good with that, right? But then like you get up there and you're like, dude, we need like fucking a ladder to get here, a ladder to get up here, we need a saw, we need a probably a set of irons, and then what type of roof is it? Do we need a pike pole, or is it this type of roof, and we need a New York hook, and that's only going to come from experiences. It's not going to come from just reading a fucking book, especially when it's written shitty.
No, I will agree with you. That's probably after you mentioning it, that is definitely one of, I'm sure, my weaknesses, because we don't, at least for my department, we don't really cut roofs very often. So here recently, a couple, what, like 3 shifts ago, we went to a house and I was like, hey, let's climb up on this roof. And then it required us to use another roof to kind of get to where we need to go. And so we kind of simulated it going slow, but you don't realize how much work it takes and how the unit has to be cohesive in getting that task done.
Yeah, and I almost think that can be said for most tasks, right? So like, I like search and rescue, right? But people are like, oh yeah, just do a quick VES. I'm like, well, what's a quick, VES? And they're like, oh yeah, it'll be nothing to go up there and pop that window, go in that room and do a search. And it's like, well, how long are you thinking realistically, right? And they'll say some outlandish number, like 40 seconds or some shit. And I'm like, oh, okay. Let's time it right now, right? And I'm not saying that we suck. I'm just saying that the time to task duration is way different than you actually think. I mean, you're just thinking that you're gonna go up there and break the whole window and one shot, and that's just simply not the case. Is it a wooden sash? Is it a vinyl sash? Is it aluminum? That's gonna change things dramatically. What ladder are you gonna take? A 14 probably isn't gonna reach. If you have a 16, great, that's probably money. But if you don't have those, then you got to take an extension ladder, and what's your resources, and you still have to mask up, which that most people's mask up time is honestly half of 40 seconds. That's their standard. So, but sorry, I went down a rabbit hole there. I was just
No, you're
going
fine.
off, but
Keep going. Yeah.
Man, time to task duration is way altered than most people think. I'm not saying pull out a stopwatch and everything, but people have to wake up a little bit and be like, oh, well, it's not that you're not as good as you think you are. It's just that you we're not, Superman, quote unquote, if you will. We can't do everything with a snap of a finger. We have time. And that's what the victims don't have.
That's
So
right.
that's why us being proficient in everything that we can do and everything that we will do is important.
Definitely. No, I'm with you 100% on that. If most firefighters can, because I, you know, we're not want to say we're all, some are ego driven, and but some need to actually stop and take a look in the mirror and, you know, realize like nobody can be good at everything, but if you can put that ego aside and be humble enough to admit like your faults and your pros and cons to yourself when it comes to the fire service, I think we could do a better job at
Yeah, man, you're either humbled or you're about ready to get humbled.
that. That's a fact. That's a fact. All right. As far as realistic training, what kind of realistic training does your company officer do or your department do for the members on the floor?
I do think our fire academy, I think is probably one of the better ones that I've seen at doing that. And then like when we do rapid intervention team stuff, we use real firefighters. We don't use dummies or anything like that. When we do search and rescue operations, we use real people. Those are kind of the big two, is real people and real conditions. And then when you add real people, you add stress. So that's kind of the big thing. Is it has to increase stress. But the other thing too is, you have to have the guys have to have the skill before they can go out and do the drill, if you will. And that's where I think a lot of people miss the mark, is if you got a guy that's been on the job, 18 years, and academies and training, has changed dramatically, in a 20-year career, right? So they might not know something that, is taught a certain way. So or performed a certain way. And that's just what happens with time on the job, is things change. And if people don't catch on to those changes, or evolve to them, if you will, they're gonna kind of get left behind. And then so you almost need like a warm-up, like a skill acquisition, day. And then be like, okay, hey, we're gonna do 4 quarters of search and rescue, and then your first quarter is, working on drags and working on, search positioning and, mindset. And then your next ones, you can start entering, drills and shit, victim removals and split search and this and that. But I think we do a pretty decent job at doing realistic, because the buildings that we use have furniture in them. They're real. There's nothing worse than a building that has nothing in it to, quote unquote, match a 4-letter acronym name thing that I'm not going to name. So it has 4 letters, and then after it has 4 numbers, and it ends with 03.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. No, I got you. Okay. And I think you're definitely right. You hit on the nail. Like, you know, if a firefighter hasn't done a skill, because there's so many different skills that we need to be proficient on. And instead of going all right, 1, 2, 3, go, it's like before we go, 1, 2, 3, go, let's go over the basics. How are we gonna do this? How do you perform this skill? And then once everybody gets their feel for it, now it's like, all right, let's run a play instead of when you show up to the drill ground, it's like, let's run a play now. Like, no, usually it never goes right. So I think if you can get together and talk, discuss, and actually go through it, going through the motions, and then you hit, all right, let's go, hit the stopwatch to get it tasked done.
Yeah, absolutely.
As far as let me see. Actually, no, I'm gonna hit this one because you kind of mentioned it a little bit earlier. Getting outside of your wheelhouse, how important, because you know how you mentioned the fire service is always evolving, things are always changing, which is 100% facts. What's your take on outside training?
Oh man, it's vital. To quote my friend Brian Brush, once you get outside of your four walls of your firehouse, you realize there is no walls. And I think I have benefited greatly from this because of the things that I do outside of my own department. I have a massive network. If I have a question on pretty much anything, I have a guy I can call with that specific expertise and be like, "Hey, what do you think of this?" And then, he'll send me pictures, videos, they'll FaceTime you, whatever. And not only that, but as far as like getting outside, your four walls and doing training, my department's been around since, 1856, and while I think it's a great department, there's always things that we can I'm not even going to say change. I think change is a bad word. I think improve, right? So what are some things that we can improve as a department? And it might be something super little, right? I'm sure you've heard of like nozzle forward, right? So I love using this analogy. So like I'd attended a class and we'd run flat loads and nozzle forward does Minutemans, right? So I come back from the class, I'm like, "Oh man, everything we do fucking sucks. We need to go all Minuteman, all this, all that," right? Right? And then like one of my mentors was like, "Hey dude, like shut up." Everything you take, you can't turn that class into the fire department, right? And I'm like, "Ah, yeah, that does make sense." But he's like, "Take little snippets of it." Right, so they call an accordion forward, but a forward stretch, right? We can do with our flat load, and then they call it, a V split.
B
We
split,
call it a back stretch, right? I can do that with a flat load as well. So like adding those little intricacies, literally just came from an outside training, right? And it makes the deployment so much faster and so much more efficient. So like those things I learned at outside training, right? And then you bring it in and you show it to your crew, right? And then your crew likes it. And then what happens is the next shift is like, "Oh man, what's that?" And then your company likes it, right? So then what happens then is, engine one's working with engine four and they're like, "Oh, engine four's like, what the hell was that?" And then engine four sees, and then engine four shows engine nine and this and that. And then before you know it, probably about a quarter of the department hates you because you're trying to change something, and then the other 75% are like, "Man, this is good shit," so.
Firefighters be firefighters, man. That's and I've learned that. I don't want to say I've learned that the hard way, but you hear that so many times with different people you talk to, where it's like you go to a conference, you're invigorated, you're ready to go, you come back and you're like, hey, my department is doing it the wrong way per se, and everything we do, like, you're not going to get any traction when you come in with that attitude. It's like finding little bits and pieces. Maybe you can turn the whole thing around, but usually you have to start small and then work your way up. So I'm gonna ask you a question. So you guys use flat loads on all your apparatus?
Our engine companies, they're all laid out the exact same.
Every single one of them.
Every single one.
Okay. So would there be a chance of the Minuteman happening or not really, because the flat load works for your department?
I don't think there's a chance for it happening, and to be honest with you, they're pretty much the same load, just one is flipped, right? So one is upside down, the other one's right side up. You can still deploy them both the same way. I think it's a very efficient load. It's simplistic, and a dumb dumb like me can figure out how to load it,
All right. So now this next question, it's I genuinely want to hear that we're not arguing. I just want to hear, like, I feel like the fire service can't have discussions anymore. So your department has a truck, two truck. I'm on a Quint. I got hose and I got 300 gallons of water. Now, my question to you is, why do you see Quints as like, oh God, like it's a Quint. It's one or the other. It can't be both. So I just want to know respectfully, and like, I want your opinion, and we're just having a conversation, why you feel that way.
Well, I don't actually think it's a terrible concept. It's how it's used and the maintenance. Those are two things that I look at, right? So is it like a full Quint concept like St. Louis? like where every single rig is a quint, or do you have engine companies and
right,
is
so
it
hold on.
mostly quints?
I'm going to use my department for example. We have, shit, put myself on the spot. One, two, I got to count because they changed one or whatever. And one, two, three, four. Okay, we have four engines, a wet rescue, two ladders, but both ladders have hose and water. So that's your example there.
Okay, yeah, I mean, depending on how the concept of using them is, I actually don't think they're a bad thing. I think especially if you're like a mid-sized department, and if these two engines are out on this side of the city, right, and you have a car fire over here, but the only thing available is a truck, I think it's a great tool, right? It's
Okay.
a great thing to have. The two things that I get held up on is how they're used at a structure fire, because the positioning can really, fuck up a lot of things. So if they park or position as an engine, right, and they pull past, and then second vehicle is an engine, right, and let's say it's an overzealous young dude, literally parks right in front of the chute. So all of your ground ladders and your aerial are basically out of commission, right? Not to mention a 300-gallon tank, I'm gonna assume.
300 gallons on our ladder, and the other ladder has 500.
Okay, 500 is a little better. So like our engine companies are 750, and
Okay.
we run with a 15/16. So I know, and this is another, I don't want to call this a time to task like we talked about earlier, but more so of knowing your rig and knowing your equipment. I can open that bale for 4 minutes, like nonstop. And people are like, oh, water supply, panicking and shit, right? It's like, dude, no. This isn't like 4 minutes of being in the building. This is like, I have that fucking nozzle fully open for 4 minutes, right? Versus if I had the same makeup on the 300, right? I would only have like a minute and, I don't know, 20, a minute 30 seconds, we'll say, minute and a half, right? So like positioning. And then the limitations of the equipment are two things. And then the big one that I don't really have to deal with, except for when I ha would have a quote unquote reserve, is the maintenance issues that could come from having a quint, because you have two different primary avenues of a pump and then the aerial apparatus, right? So it's two things could go wrong versus just one when you have a true of each. I do under I do understand the cost savings, I guess, by turning two vehicles into one. Yeah, but if it was me, and it was if I was on a quint and we arrived first, whether I was the engine pulling a line or the truck, I would park right in front of the building, because that way you can utilize the apparatus to its fullest potential, which it's easier to stretch hose than it is to you can't stretch the stick,
I was gonna say that. Yep. And somebody said that to me, and I was like, oh shit, yeah, you're right. Hey, we're short on hose. Okay, let's add. Hey, we're short on the roof, or the aerial getting to the roof. Yeah, we can't stretch any more ladders. So, no, makes sense. And like I said, I just wanted to hear your take on it because you hear it on social media, you see the comments, and it's like, bro, like why are we such savages when it comes to maybe that's what works for that department or whatever the case may be. But and I remember listening to an episode with I think it's Chris Tobin, pretty sure he's with St. Louis. Where he talked about how St. Louis had everything was the quint, and it was very confusing, and I can see that because like, your truck companies that are pulling up on trucks are kind of doing engine work, and so the skill and the art of being the latter kind of gets lost in translation.
Well, and that's the other thing too, and it's a good thing you bring that up, because it allows me to kind of change up a little bit, but the mindset of those two specific tasks, right? So like, if I'm pulling up on a truck company, I'm looking at the building as where are the people, and like, how is my best way of getting in and getting to them? Like, those are my two big things, right? And then like, if I'm driving, obviously, I'm looking at the roof, I'm looking at the smoke conditions and shit too. But if I'm riding backstep, then I'm just looking at that as far as like, where are the people gonna be, and what's the best way to get there? Can I tell where the staircase is from the outside, looking at windows and construction, versus if I'm on the engine company, right? I'm looking at the building going, okay, it's a balloon frame and we got fire on the first floor. We probably need to get a line to floor two, or we're gonna have to take our line up to floor two, get a, you know, a second line in here on one, and then we have to look at the attic as well, right? So like, as the engine, you're looking at the fire so you could put the line between the fire and the people. And then as the truck, you know, it's all the mindset about getting to the people and getting them out. So it's as long as you had it like within your policies that the Quint is, you know, a truck and will operate unless, you know, extenuating circumstances like a car fire or, you know, a mulch fire or some shit like that, that I would say it's fine.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Perfect. No feelings will hurt. We're still good. That's why I want people to understand. Like, let's have conversations. Let's stop fucking. If you don't like my opinion, I'm done with you. Like, nobody wins in that situation. So how did, with you being in the fire service, how did you become part of Brothers in Battle?
So I think it was like 2018 maybe. So I started my own Fire Nuggets affiliate for Illinois. So I wanted more it's funny you mentioned that earlier. I wanted more realistic training in
Okay.
my area, right? I wanted more less like check, 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 more so of hey, in this situation and this skill set and these drills, right? Like I wanted to do drills rather than a checklist of objectives, quote unquote, right? So started my own Fire Nuggets affiliate, and I think Cody was the second class I had out for us. Did a VES Beyond the Door, and probably changed a lot of my mindset on this one. So we held the class. I had already taken the class, I think the year before. I drove down to April Fool's Conference in Kansas City, and I took the class there. And after we did the class, there was two guys from Fort Dodge, Iowa, in the class here. And 2 weeks later, I get a Facebook messenger and somebody I'm not friends with on Facebook, and it was one of those two guys. And 2 weeks later, they went back. First ever VES rescue their department's ever made. A woman, she lived, right? So like that's like a like that's an impact, right? So like we're making an impact. So it really struck a chord that like the hosting of the classes and bringing classes and outside training in was a vital thing that needed to happen. So, and you know. Cody saw it, and so him and I talked about it and how you know, making an impact is an important thing and this and that. And then, I mean, Cody and I pretty much since then had been friends. You know, I could call and shoot a question to him, and then you know, we were hosting his classes, you know, kind of all around the country with Fire Nuggets anyway. So I don't know, three-ish years ago, he asked if I would like to come on and teach with him. And I said, yep. So went and did a class where I was the instructor rather than the host logistics guy
Okay.
down in Dallas, Texas area. And then pretty much ever since then, been part of the Brothers in Battle family.
Well, she wrote. Okay. I do have a question. When you mentioned Fire Nuggets affiliate, is that kind of like a fool's group, a fool's chapter, or no?
Yeah, I guess you could say that's pretty similar. We only have like one affiliate per state, rather than like closer regionalized ones. Other than California. California has two different ones just because it's so large from north to south. But yeah, so I help host a bunch of training here in Illinois through that.
Okay. And so I got another question for you, because anytime, you know, you're trying to better yourself, you're trying to better those around you, you know, even though it might be individuals you don't know, you're still making an impact, like what happened in Fort Dodge. The limelight shines on you. Did you receive, at least maybe not to your face, but any pushback? People, who does this guy think he is? Because you know the saying, you never profit in your own land. If that did happen, what advice can you give to individuals that are facing that? Because it seems to me, if somebody's truly trying to better the fire service, you know, as long as they're not, but you know, like there's a way to go about it. If they're staying humble, but they genuinely want to make a change, man, the fucking haters come out of nowhere. So, did you experience that?
So at that time, no, because I'd already experienced it before. And I think how I dealt with it and handled it right is so like anybody that's working harder than you isn't gonna say shit. So that's number one. And number two, you almost kind of fucking kill them with kindness. So like I'm not saying suck up to them, but like you kind of mess with their mind a little bit with kindness. So like I don't know. I probably only had like 3 or 4 years in the job, and there was a state certified vehicle extrication class that you know some people needed and wanted. So we had the tools, we had the equipment, we had the junkyard, and I was like, well, fuck it, I have the stuff to do it, you know. So then you know our truck companies do extrications here, the engine companies don't. So I wasn't on a truck company. So like one dude was like, "Well, who the fuck do you think you are?" And I'm like, "Well, actually, dude, like, I need a guy on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Are you available?" And then nothing. So, but that small little like gesture, you know, they back down a little bit. Yeah, they still get a little bit pissed off, you know, here and there. But you know what, dude? I'm pretty dumb, and anybody can, you know, step up and lead informally and do whatever the hell they want. There's nobody telling you what you can and can't do except for you.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. But it's just, to me, I always question and I always wonder, like, why does that happen? Like that whole saying, I've heard that a lot. Like, who are you? Like, what gives you the right or whatever? But it's like, if you have an organization and no one's taking the ball, picking up and running with it, to me, that organization stays stagnant. And sometimes you have to go against the grain to affect change in a positive way for the future of the fire service.
Yeah, I do think it's almost twofold. Like you have to do things the right way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean you can't have like 6 months on ever, you know,
Right,
and be
right.
like, hey, I'm doing this advanced forcible entry, you know, class, and you know, so you got to do things the right way. You got to have experiences, you know, in order to back that up as well. But also too on the other side, if you do have some of those things and you're a humble human being and you know you're not blasting out, you know, look at me, and you have your name on it and shit like that, not trying to you know look like the next flavor of the year, you know, then I think there's some of those people that get pissed off. They're just a little bit jealous that it's not them, and they're worried about future opportunities because your name, quote unquote, is in the limelight of being a leader, you know, whether it's locally, regionally, or nationally.
Okay. All right. And so and I'm just asking because I don't know, but did you have a hand in getting firemanship to Aurora? Was that something you and Cody discussed and you realized, hey, like our jurisdiction, we got the perfect spot to do this?
Yeah, my wife would probably agree with this statement. I'm pretty fucking annoying. I think even before I became a cadre member for Cody, which Cody I think was thinking about putting me on a little bit earlier, but he was worried about all the shit I have going on already. I think I'd probably been bothering him since like 2021 or 2022. Like, hey, we should bring it back. I don't know where you want to do it, but I'm in to you know help out and this and that. And I want to say, it might have been in Wyoming. We were in Casper, Wyoming. I think it was 2022. 22 or 23, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. We were there, and Cody's wife, Andrea's there. She's really, you know, number one in the operation. She would kick our ass. She's there, and you know, I pitched to Cody like, hey man, I think we can get it, and I think I have the spot and the logistics and the ability and the help to do it. So she asked me a bunch of questions, and you know, I'll be honest, it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of things that I'm not good at is like fully 100% depending on another, right? Like trust is hard in like five people. Trust in like 100 is like nearly impossible. So That was like the only thing like I had to clear up. Like we had the training sites, we had, the fire engines and ladder trucks and forcible entry tools and force doors and all that shit. We had all that stuff, and I was like, yeah, we can make this a lock. And then Cody and Andrea met with myself and my wife, Ash, and we sat down, had a meeting, kind of talked about what we were all going to knock out, what our own specific job tasks were, and then we just kind of started getting after it. And I think the city that we have it in, which is lucky enough where I work, I think it's a great city. It has a historical theater in it, the Paramount Theater, where we host it, which adds like a really cool vibe. My department supports it, and about 15 to 25 local agencies all kind of give in and help out with it too. So it's a win-win for the region as well.
And coming together, doing that, like you said, definitely no easy task. But the reward you all saw, how it brings firemen together, firemen that just want to get better at the job for their respective community, for their respective organizations. When you saw how the first, or not, it's not the first firemanship, but it's like the revamped, it's been a while. When you saw it come to fruition and at the end, the experiences and how well it did, what was going through your head? What did you feel?
Well, let's do it again. I have like a ADHD, mind, and it's always like, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? And if there is no next thing, I don't know what my mind would really do, to be completely honest with you. That was my thought. And it was just so cool to see, like, if you go out to like one training site, you see guys from Canada, and then like right next to them as a guy from Hawaii, all in, just the Aurora, Illinois area, just putting in some training. And the amount of support too that we got from vendors was unbelievable. Scott, 3M Scott, gave us all the air packs that we needed, which was like 250, if I remember right. Key Hose gave us all the hose, which was over 10,000 feet, which is a shit ton, if you're ever wondering. Elkhart Brass giving us all the nozzles. Monster Energy Drinks gave us all the water for free. Just a lot of cool stuff that we got to be a part of, and relationships and things like that.
And if somebody, let's just say they're not gonna do something to that size, but you have a lot of individuals that could definitely do something positive for the fire service. Maybe they're thinking about doing some small event or conference. What advice can you give them?
Oh, don't go. This sounds so backwards. Don't go so big and so cool that it doesn't work. And what I mean by that is, people, because of fire nuggets, right? People call me and they want to set up a class, or they want to ask my question on this or that, and they're like, yeah, we got this really awesome venue. They're only charging us 10 grand for the day. And I'm like, 10 grand for the day? What the f That's a lot of money, dude. And they're like, well, yeah. And I'm like, yeah. And you got to pay the instructor fee, you got to pay for the flights, you got to pay for the hotel. You're looking at, 15, 20 grand. I was like, do you have 200 students that, I'd say $100 per lecture day is pretty average, 100, 150. And they're like, oh, I don't think I have that. And I was like, all right, well, do you have like a firehouse that has like a training room that has, 100 seats in it, 50 to 100 seats? And they're like, well, yeah. I'm like, well, do it there. It's free. Or if your local department has it, then say, hey man, we'll give you 10 free seats if we can just use your place, right? I mean, this should come to no shocker. Free is better than 10 grand. That's my thing is, don't shoot for the moon on your first one. Slowly grow, slowly build up your relationships. Lectures are super easy and manageable. Versus when you add hands-on training is a fucking disaster, if I'm being completely honest. Just because there's a lot of shit you don't think about.
Right. Okay. All right. Anyone listening out there that wants to do something, you heard it there first. So I do have a question. The whole Fire Nuggets concept, for those that don't know, what is Fire Nuggets and how did you end up, like currently right now, you're the president. How did that come about?
Okay, so Fire Nuggets was started. The thought process was the late 90s, actually, and it kind of came to fruition in the 99, 2000 timeframe by Ted Corporandi and Paul Schuler. So they made a online publication magazine that firefighters could look at online, which, if you think about 99, 2000, right, and online, I mean, we might have had DSL. At my house at that time still, but so different times. So they did that for a good stretch of many years, which Andy Fredericks wrote some articles before 9/11 unfortunately happened, and so we pay a lot of tribute to Andy and his legacy as well on our website and stickers and things like that. So they did that for many years. I forget exactly when they stopped, but the business, if you will call it that, oh, I was stagnant. And then Berkeley firefighters bought it actually in 2014. So Dave Sprague, he's actually the current fire chief in Berkeley, California. Him, PK and Alfonso were the three main guys out there, and then Paul Schuler's son Joey actually is on the board with them and us. He's the vice president, which is Paul's son. So anyway, they started in 2014. They started back up. They make it a nonprofit, right? So they're like, well, let's start offering classes. So if like, have you ever heard of Mile High Firefighter Conference? So like that's something that we help with. And what can we do that fire conferences struggle with? And it's like the back end logistical nightmare stuff that you don't think of. Like when you think of running a fire conference, right? You're thinking of like hose, nozzles, fire engines, force doors, tools, this and that, right? You're not thinking of registrations, insurance, flights, hotels, invoicing. You're not thinking of any of that. So that's kind of the bread and butter of what we do is we help people host fire classes and fire conferences. So we have probably about 25 states that have affiliates. Currently, and then those affiliates. So, like for instance, Florida just became one, and they have just some studs that run that one. Grant Schwalbe is on there. Ben Schultz, John Lockwood, who made the Lockwood hook for Leatherhead, and Jeff Merwick. So, just some absolute studs, and all they want to do is they just want to bring training into Florida, right? So, when you work with us, there's rules, but there's really no rule. You can do whatever, you can bring whoever you want in, right? And we help you host it. We run the registration, we run the budget, we make sure that there isn't going to be a catastrophic loss. We help with insurance. And then the affiliate in Texas can be doing the same thing, so that's what we do. We're a nonprofit 501c3, and we host classes and conferences all around the country. For anyone listening, we do not have our first international affiliate yet. So if you want to become our first international, we're in.
Understood. So how did you get into that realm of Fire Nuggets? Did somebody approach you? Is that something you saw and was like, "Hey, I want to be a part of that"?
So yeah, I started my affiliate in Illinois in 2018, and kind of funny. I literally was reading an article back then, and it said on the Fire Nuggets website, "Become an affiliate. Click here." And it literally was like a cold call email, basically, to the board of directors. And so I became an affiliate in 2018, and just a few years later, I became the I got on the board. They saw that I have that ADHD mind of just, next thing, the next thing, the next thing. Let's go, let's go, let's go. So they put me on the board of directors, and helped run a couple large conferences across the country, West Coast Truck Conference we did out in Seattle. And then I started helping out with Mile High more on the back end and a couple other ones. And then they voted me into vice president for a term. And then I've been the president since January of last year. And that's the board votes on you.
Okay, man, a lot of stuff being a lot of stuff behind the scenes that you don't, at least I didn't know. That's why I wanted to ask that question. All right. So with that being said, what is Jeffrey Bryant Jr.'s passion? What's your passion in fire service? What's your because everybody's got to have a thing. And so what's yours?
You want the big answer or the small answer?
You can give me the big answer. We're talking.
Service. I think everything revolves around service. So like what can I do to make, somebody else's life or their event or whatever easier, right? Or what class can I help with that will help out these 30 students, and then these 30 students take it back to, their department and, make an impact. How can I be of better service to my family and to my wife, and things like that. So like that's the big answer. And if you want the small answer for like on the fire department, what my passion is, it's probably, search and rescue. So two kind of weird ends there, but as far as like the big picture wise, it's service. I love giving back. I think if you're just trying to get things, that's what I call a taker. So all you really care about is just what you can take, rather than what you can give. I think giving is kind of what our main purpose in life is.
Sure. Okay. And you mentioned it. So, well, you mentioned a keyword. So, firefighter rescue survey, you're a part of that. How did that come about?
No, yeah, probably the same time frame, like 2018, 2019. I'm passionate, So Nick Ledeen, you ever heard of Nick? So Nick's a really good friend of mine, runs the Wisconsin Fire Nuggets affiliate, also is on the Firefighter Rescue Survey board. So Nick, the board, actually it wasn't even a board back then, it was just a group. So that started, the rescue survey started in 2016, and it was five individuals. It was Shane Thomas, who's on Clackamas, Justin McWilliams, Clackamas search culture guy, most people know him, Nick Ledeen, Brian Olson, which is just a fucking phenomenal man, Brian, and then Trent Morrison, which was kind of our behind the scenes tech website guy. So these guys got together, when you fill out a NIFRS report, right, they ask you civilian death, civilian injury, firefighter death, firefighter injury, right? They don't ask about a civilian rescue. The only thing that you could put in is when you put your tasks that you performed, right? So like overhaul, search and rescue, ventilation, right? You can put search and rescue in, but there's other than if you label it in your report, there is no idea of how much of a win that we're having on the fire ground, right? So they're like, man, I wonder how many wins we actually have. So then, with how many wins do we have? Well, how are we winning? Like, where are we finding people? What's some things that we as a fire service are messing up on that we can correct or change or, whatever, right? So those five started that in 2016. It was just a Google form, if you will, back then. 2018, 2019, myself and Jason Marshall is one of our main data guys now, came out of the team. And really all that I got put on there for was just because I care. That's my opinion, is I just care. So that's the only reason I got put on the team. And basically to help with, social media presence. And we started, some Facebook groups and Instagram pages, and basically getting the word out. So our team now, we're a nonprofit 501c3 board as well now, and our team is I think there's 12 of us. We have really great firefighters from across the country. Brian Brush is on the team, Ben Schultz, Katie Hufker. She's a volunteer in Missouri, but she is a Stanford grad. She is one of our data people along with Jason. So like the cool part about our group, Lane's a Hurric, Wichita guy. The cool part of our group is we all have like our own specific like job task, if you will, like
Right.
the stuff we're good at, right? And then we just kind of handle what we're good at, and then like the other parts of the team, like there's cool like data questions and stuff going on now that I'm not a part of because that's not my wheelhouse, but it's cool shit going on. And then, you know, if it's like class delivery or, you know, standard operating procedure or like operation tactics, that's more so where like Justin and myself come in. And then when it's like looking at data and shit, that's Nick. So just a really cool team. You know, we've hit over 4,000 rescues have been submitted. And the cool part about this is it's qualitative data. So like if you make the rescue, Danny, you should be the one filling out the rescue
Right.
survey. So then like it's legit your experiences. Hey, what was the smoke conditions like? Was it low, moderate, high visibility? You know, was the victim found behind the door? Was there any reports of victims inside? Yes or no? You know, things like that. So I think and I'm probably biased, but I think it's one of the coolest things going on right now in the fire service that's gonna make probably one of the biggest impacts, at least for the short term. I hope it's the long term, but it does seem that, you know, stuff like topics, you know, like engine company ops, search and rescue, this and that, they stay like hot and cool for like, you know, about 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And then, you know, it's the next thing, you
Right.
know.
Right.
But like my buddy Kyle Romigas says, rescue is the objective. So I'm hoping that this kind of stays at the forefront of everyone's thoughts now.
No, I mean, I can, first off, I can proudly say that my organization, I was a part, we were dispatched to a call, a structure fire, ended up having a victim found by me, the help of my captain and a couple other individuals. I mean, he was like 250, 275, literally dead weight. We were able to pull him out. I started CPR immediately. Unfortunately, he passed away, but I can at least say my organization submitted that and I was the one to fill those questions out. And it's 100% legit. Like the questions were on point. There's nothing that's like, well, I don't know, because the rescuer should definitely fill it out because they would have more information. So I'm glad to say that I submitted a report. I'm part of the 4,000, not me specifically, but the organization I work for is. And here recently, a buddy in mine, we both conducted a search class for our organization and we used the data from the 4,000 rescues. And it's eye-opening to see how people are like, shit, all right, victims are going to be found, means of egress, bedrooms, hallways, kitchens, not so much. Like it's fascinating how the data can help provide the insight, which leads to making our tactics and the way we do things based off the data, because everything's based on data. We know for organizations, fire departments look at data for where are we going to place the next fire station? What type of apparatus does it need to be? So, my personal opinion, I don't think it's going away at all. I think, if anything, it's just going to continue to grow and grow and grow.
Yeah, and the cool part is, you know, NIFRS was purchased by UL and it's becoming NARIS. They're going to have some rescue questions, I think, in like a rescue module, but it's nowhere near what we do, where like they're just trying to get data sets for overall general, you know, rescues in the fire ground, right? Where our data sets come from, how can we improve and what are some things that we shouldn't be doing anymore? Like my big things that I hate is the things that are said, more so than things that are done. So like I hate fully involved. I hate it. I hate reports of everyone's out of the house. And I don't like vacant terms. Though
Facts.
yeah, those are my three things that I dislike
All
heavily.
facts. Yeah,
So
definitely, definitely all facts. And you know, when people ask why, which people should ask why, we can go, here's the data showing why. Because yes, I don't know how many articles, Facebook posts you see, they got dispatched to a vacant structure, homeless people were found in there trying to stay warm. Everybody's fully involved means a lot of different things. You have some people that they'll say fully involved, and you're like, okay, this guy or gal doesn't know anything. And then you have individuals when they say feel involved, it's like, man, they're probably right. But we still got to do our due diligence. So I'm with you 100% on that. With you 100%. And with everything that you all the groups and cadres that you're a part of, are you able to take what you're learning back to your own organization? And are your chief officers and company officers like receptive, like, hey, yeah, let's look into this. Let's try to make Aurora better than it was, in previous years or previous generations.
I've been pretty involved with the Fire Academy for multiple years, and one of my closest friends, he pretty much runs a lot of the day-to-day operations, if you will, of the Fire Academy. And then our training chief is great, and we actually turned our search and rescue operations into a search week, so it's 5 days of search and rescue.
Okay. Now, for anyone listening that wants to do that, I'm not trying to have you divulge all your information. Can you maybe list what each day is and what the objective is?
Oh, absolutely. So, day one, you start in the classroom, and it's really just to build a mindset. We go over how many civilian deaths there are. Which, funny, we brought up NARIS. I believe that they're kind of doing a audit, if you will, of some of the information. So, how many civilian deaths does a fire service say we typically have per year?
That's a good question. I don't know off the top of my head.
Ballpark, most say it's like 3,500 ish.
Okay.
So through this audit, I think that they're finding that that number might be off a bit, and it's on the higher end, right? So
Okay.
I'm not gonna forgive. I didn't mean to say that word, but I'm not gonna say that they're. I'm not gonna give away all their secrets, but let's just say. We'll go ballpark, and we'll go to like the next big one, right? And we'll say 5,000, right?
Okay.
So 5,000 civilian deaths. So I kind of like to lay this out in the classes I teach too, is about the mindset. Is let's talk about two of the worst events to ever happen in American history. And 9/11, civilian wise, 9/11 had 2,997 deaths in one day, right? And then Pearl Harbor being your next one, which was about 2,000 and some change, mid 2,500s ish area, right? So we're looking at 5,000 between two of the worst events in American history, and people know those events, remember those events, and we know everything about it, right? That's happening in the American Fire Service every single year. Granted, yes, it's over 365 days, right? But
Right.
that's still an unbelievable number. And then get on a soapbox here a little bit, right? But we look at firefighter death, right? And people say, oh, we shouldn't go in and do search and rescue because of safety or firefighter safety, right? And because we're losing all these firefighters and all these firefighters are dying and stuff, right? So like, yes, it when one of us die, it's absolutely tragic. And it's hard to you should never forget it, right? But it's hard to move past, right? But they always say, right, like 100 firefighters per year die is the average, right?
All right.
But at least half, maybe even 60% of that is from medical, whether that's
Absolutely. Cardiac.
cardiac and cancer related. And then your next big one is vehicle accidents. So whenever you get down to it, the actual amount of firefighters dying inside or on top of a building is actually like five, six ish per year, right? So five, six firefighter deaths versus 5,000 civilian deaths, right? So like you could go to like 1,000 fires per year for like 1,000 years and you'll never catch up to them. Yeah, it's just absolute insanity. And the minute that we put our livelihood 100% in front of the civilians that we're here for is the day that I think we won't have a career or a calling anymore.
That's a fact.
Yeah. So anyway, that first day we drive that mindset of why we're here, rescue is the objective, this and that. And then that's probably about 2 hours. And then we go out to the drill grounds and we do nothing but drags. And we only teach three drags. We keep it super simple, super basic. And then we do window transitions, both from first floor and then the second floor as well. And then we finish the day just doing mask ups. So we have a time standard of 20 seconds. So we just try to hit that time standard by the
Nice.
end of it. So that's day one. And then day two, they come back. That's so I'm big on like rescue is like taught first. That's why we do the drags. That's why we do the window transitions and stuff. So like, do you do like Olympic weightlifting by chance?
I do not, no, sir.
Oh, okay. So like a clean and jerk is a type of
Okay.
Olympic
Yes,
lift,
I know
right?
what that is.
So
Yes,
like,
yes.
it's like if you can clean the weight, you should be able to jerk the weight up, right? But if you can't, right, then there was no point to do it in the first place. So like, I always think of it like that way. So I always do rescue first. And because as far as like rescue skills, other than getting them out of the building through a drag or through a lift, there's really not that much involved with rescue other than your mindset, drive, and heart. Right. So then the second day we go into search skills. So like our search positioning, we're not on all fours, how we're gonna search a bed in a crib, that's first. So like we do the smallest object first, and then we go into searching a room, and then we go into searching a floor, and then into searching a house. So we do all that. We're just doing skill work. So we go over a split search, an oriented search, an engine-based search, and then a VES, right? I go over all the things with that, and we're showing them everything. We're not just explaining it and then just them doing. We're showing them. And then day three, that's our first real day, if you will. We use smoke machines a lot because we can use as many live victims as we want, no problem. So day three is when we start getting into the drills. Everything is real. Nothing is off limits. So like if you go take a class and you're like, oh hey, I found this Vic, I'm gonna take him out the back door, and the instructor's like, oh, you can't go out that way. No, that's fucking horse shit. So we allow whatever. You want
Okay.
to go out, you want to go out a window? Okay, the ladder isn't there. You got to figure something out, call for a ladder, right? Those are things you got to think about. So we make them think about it in the academy. So we work with them. So like the very first drill of the day, we're working alongside them, showing them kind of what it looks like, add the smoke and shit. And then we use thermal imaging cameras, watch them, make sure that they're doing the right things, talk about communication. Less communication is actually better. It's a house. There's going to be doors. There's going to be windows. There's going to be couches. There's going to be beds. We don't need to know what every single one is. Biggest ones are victim, victim, victim. Hey, I got a victim over here. Or room is clear, right? Clear, negative, whatever you want to say. And then day four, we start getting into stress. So we'll have some of us will act, we'll say, hey, my kid's up there in that room or this and that. And then day five, we add some more conditions. So if day four wasn't very hot, day five we add some heat. But they have everything at this point. They have a ladder truck they can use. They have an engine they can use. They're forcing doors. They're taking victims out the window. They're taking real victims out the window. Are they dumping them in the platform? Are they taking a ground ladder to them? Are they pulling them out to the third floor veranda? They're doing CPR on babies. And the biggest thing, if you're going to do this, is don't be a dick. And what I mean by that is do not build a training scar. So don't throw a baby in like a dresser drawer or on top of the straw bin that you have, right? Don't throw the baby. The baby isn't going to be up there, dude.
That's right.
Okay. We don't tell them yes or no for they can't go in this place, they can't go in that place. If we don't want them to go there, we'll build a wall. We take the extra time, So things like that, no training scars are allowed. That's probably the biggest thing. We use radio traffic towards the end as well. Honestly, if you want to know or have questions or need to ask questions, just get a hold of me. You can call me, text me, whatever. I don't care.
Love it, man. Like, 'cause everything you said, dude, like the training scars, that shit's real. That's shit, I've been there where the instructor, we find a way out and they're like, nope, you can't go out that way. And it's like, why not? Because. And then you're just like, okay. So then to me, that's how the whole thing of the way you came in is the same way you got to take the victim out tactic happens, because it's like, well, shit, there's a window or a door here. Instead of going through that bad stuff, I can get them out this way. But oh, nope, we can't do that. So I'm 100% with you. And put victims where they're actually going to be found. I'm
Yeah.
so with you on that, man. So with you.
Yeah. And if you're that instructor that wants to be the quote unquote, dick, right? And you're like, oh, well, the victim is like within 10 feet of the back door. That's so easy. And you're like, well, number one, that's where like 10% of vics are found. They're found within that 6 foot of that door, bro. And then, and number two, if they're taking them out to Charlie, if you want to be a dick, right? Well, let's not turn this into a training scar. We'll turn this into a teachable moment. They're taking them out to Charlie. Where does that mean that the cot and the EMS guys need to go, or the victim needs to come to? They need to go in the alpha, right? Because if you look at most, Charlie divisions, right? Do you have a fence in the way? Is there any good way to get a cot back there? Things like that. So make it a teachable moment. Hey, we got a victim out in the Charlie. Hey, you got to bring that victim around to the alpha so we can get him in the ambulance, right?
Definitely.
So by the end of the week, they do everything from basically start to finish. Like, they'll, the officer of the group, will say, hey, we're en route, blah, blah, blah. Do radio comms till you actually put a victim on the stretcher, put them in the ambulance. You do CPR, all this and that,
Love it. Love it. Okay. All right. My last question I always like to get asked the guests, it's kind of a personal question, but where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up?
Oh, I don't know. In my opinion, I'm pretty young. I think I'm young. So, I still have 20 plus years in me,
Okay.
for sure, and maybe even 30. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But, I'd like to be in a position where I can make an impact in my department, and then also in, the region or nationally, right? Like, I just want to be able to have the ability to affect improvements upon the fire service to where it'll affect victim lives and firefighters also.
Okay, so is company officer at some point? Question mark, maybe, or do you want to just stay a backstep for right now?
No, I actually I do want to be an officer. It's the testing process is going on right now, so I do want to become a company officer, lead a crew, and then hopefully build their mindset and build their love for the job and their care, and what drives them as well. Hopefully be a reflection of what my drives are.
Okay. All right. And lastly, any other group or cadre you're considering? Hey, I want to join this one because you said you're always looking for that next thing.
No, I'm pretty good for right
Maxing,
now.
maxed out, right?
Yeah, no, I'm pretty good for right now. Doing all that, and then trying to be the best husband and father I can be too. Kind of maxes it out,
Right.
so.
Right. Okay. All right. Man, listen, I really appreciate you doing this. It's always great. Like I learned what fire nuggets is because I hear it and I'm like, oh, fire nuggets. But like until you ask those questions and hear how it came about and what exactly they do, and just talking to individuals that are like-minded, man. I appreciate, I'm not saying this is all on you, but I appreciate how, firemanship is back. It's in Aurora. Me and a buddy of mine, we're trying to plan. Trying to find the right time to go, making sure it's okay with the wives and stuff, but keep doing you. I'm sure you don't mind the haters because we all have them, but like just stay genuine and true to yourself. And thank you for coming on Talking Chop.
Well, thank you so much for having me, man.
Sir, I appreciate you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.